You're listening to Vatican Radio. Is religion a source of conflict, or can it be the solution to conflicts and violence around the world today? Those questions were at the heart of a recent Sant'Egidio International Interfaith Conference held here in Rome at the end of September with the theme The Courage to Hope. Each year, the encounter draws together hundreds of religious and political leaders from all continents and all the major faith traditions to explore, pray, and discuss practical ways of promoting dialogue, peace, and reconciliation. Among those attending this year's conference was landmine survivor Jerry White, who serves with the US State Department's Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations. He's also helping to lead a new government initiative bringing together people of faith to work on conflict prevention and resolution. He came to Vatican Radio to tell me more about the vision and the hopes behind this important initiative.
So, Secretary Kerry, back in Washington this summer, announced this first ever Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives. And this is a way of engaging faith-based groups all around the world on issues of, well, actually three major ones. One is development, sustainable development. The other is religious freedom and human rights. And the third, which I'm spearheading in a sense, is conflict mitigation and religion.
What kind of reaction have you had so far to this initiative?
I think very positive, just like Secretary Clinton had innovated by creating this new Bureau of Conflict and Stabilization Operations. You're seeing a lot of sort of transformational leadership or innovation out of Washington these days. I think September was a very big month where you saw that at the UN General Assembly, the openings to Iran, the conversations on Israel-Palestine, as well as Syria and chemical weapons. So we're seeing a lot of very important diplomatic initiatives in the conflict space. And the question is, what is the track two side of this? How do you engage faith-based communities, NGOs, and people to be able to support peace initiatives? So there's all sorts of lovely examples we're starting to look at. But first of all, you had to set, you know, in Washington, a bureaucracy to innovate, which is not so easy to do. But with Secretary Clinton and now Secretary Kerry under Obama's leadership, you're seeing a lot of new things happening out of Washington.
And do you see religious leaders keen to engage, to take up this challenge, if you will?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's controversial, you know, with the Establishment Clause or our Constitution and separation of church and state. There is this debate on how best to engage religious actors and not show any favoritism. But when you can join forces on something, maybe a secular initiative like cleaning up the Jordan River Valley, for example, but then you can engage environmentalists and religious and faith leaders who care about the sacred sites there. Or there's a number of examples where you can just pick water, environmentalism, climate change, or in my case, conflict and violence prevention, and see what can we do together that will make sure that sort of all religious leaders and communities can be rowing in the same direction to tap into the resilience that is possible for peacemaking.
There are already many initiatives, Sant'Egidio being one of them, many initiatives of faith leaders trying to come together, trying to influence the political situation. Sometimes it seems without much in the way of results.
I think sometimes, as Sant'Egidio has sort of shown, sometimes quieter is better, you know, building friendship, building relationship, creating community of peace, you know, networks of peace, and keeping that conversation going. So some of the things that you just aren't making the headlines, and Sant'Egidio is a perfect example. Here in Rome, where they're gathering 350 people from all around the world, you start to see actually the breadth and depth of these types of friendship relationships and outreach. That sets the stage for dialogue, for relationship building and friendship that is really the ecosystem for peace. But still, there's no substitute for having some diplomatic effort, some top-down negotiations.
Looking at that situation, you mentioned progress, perhaps on Syria, progress with Iran, the U.S. relationship. Do you see this as a moment of hope? Is it fair to describe it as such?
Well, that's why I think the title of the conference, Courage to Hope, and the Courage of Hope. President Obama, in his address at the United Nations, talked about the need for wisdom and courage. And this idea of hope means you have to actually believe that it's possible. I don't think it does us much good to sort of wring our hands and say, I wonder if Secretary Kerry will deliver Mideast peace, you know, in our day. You know, looking at our watches and being cynical and pessimistic doesn't get anything done. So the use of his personal diplomacy and the State Department and the White House engagement is hyper important from a top-down point of view. But then you still have to be preparing the ground bottom-up. So without a number of levels of work, I don't think we find peace. But I think it's very, I am very hopeful about a number of the conflicts. In fact, this new bureau that we're working on is actually having some impact both in Kenya, in Burma, in Nigeria, in the Delta, as well as in Honduras, some of the early places where we started to do our work.
What kind of results are you talking about? What kind of tangible progress can you see?
Well, in each case, for example, I guess the most recent from last spring was we set out to prevent sort of the destabilizing electoral violence in Kenya in the run-up to the elections last March. And you go there and you realize many people are doing great work, lots of NGOs, and our investments are about $1 billion a year from the United States point of view. So the question is, how can you prevent what happened in the last elections from destabilizing and causing like a flight of capital as well as tourism as well as good NGO work? So something we did was as simple as building a community among all of the grantees from development agencies, the USAID, but also DFID, talking with embassies and ambassadors and saying, if you all care about your work, horticulture, microenterprise, water, environment, women, HIV, AIDS, whatever it might be, but what could derail all of that? Well, violence, destabilizing and going viral after the elections. So this was a case in which just networking NGOs and embassies to work together, sort of row in the same direction on nonviolence, was a way to head it off, to work with bishops, to work with faith communities, because they had the constituencies for peace that were already built into the system. That was the community resilience that was there. So in a lot of these cases, you're tapping into what's there, the indigenous faith-based communities, the hope and aspirations for peace. So at the end of the day, when you got to the elections, you had some violence, but nothing that was destabilizing around the order that we had seen previously. And this was largely due to the Kenyans themselves. It's not just, you know, the outsiders coming in and preaching peace. It's actually that it's there, and Kenyans voted for nonviolence last March.
Returning finally to the area of the Middle East, an area where you have a particular interest of your own, don't you, from your early studies, Judaic studies, do you think that it is possible to have that same kind of working together that you're talking about there? Is there a real hope that religious people of faith can perhaps have an impact on reconciliation there in this intractable, seemingly intractable conflict?
In this case, I think absolutely. I mean, we understand that the U.S. influence, although people think we have much more power than we do in some cases and we should be twisting arms and pushing diplomatically, really our agenda is to set the table and the sequence and the timetable for the peace negotiations and how things should move along. Us pushing any particular outside agenda or appearing to play favorites on one side or the other turns out to be counterproductive and unhelpful, as you might imagine. So on issues of final status, Jerusalem, borders, Jordan, you know, the Jordan River, for example, is a good example to look at. So really it's indirect influence of NGOs and faith-based communities and campaigns and coalitions that will make the difference. So one initiative is how to save or revitalize the Jordan River. What is it? Well, that's a water initiative in local NGOs like Friends of the Earth Middle East and coalitions reaching out to Muslims, Christians, Jews, I would call them the Abrahamics. They're the ones who will set the agenda for prioritizing peace, but done in a way not always using those words of peace and justice, but actually looking at areas of returning people to farming, having pilgrim paths that are safe, getting rid of the landmines that are in the way or causing injury or danger to civilians. So it's really working on a collective cause that is a peace-building effort that matters. So as people do top-down diplomacy, we need communities and these faith-based initiatives to be working bottom-up. And that's where I think Christians, Muslims, and Jews, and sort of all people can work together and really play a very significant role in this peace. And I don't think we'll get there without the people.